Hello and welcome to our monthly teleconference, web conference. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg of Star K Kosher. We're brought to you by kosherclasses.org, and those of us joining us by web can see on your screen our website. This is a monthly conference, the last Wednesday of each month at noon Eastern Time, and we're going to be talking with Rabbi Shalom Mostovsky. I'll get to that in a minute, but I want to emphasize we enjoy taking questions over here, either on what we are discussing or if you have a general, even off-the-topic question, tangent, please feel free to ask either by chat. Those of you joining us on Dimdim, you see the chat window over there, and we can see what you are interested in, or if you're by phone, hit 1-1 on your keypad, and that will show us that you have a question and that we'll be able to take that question. If you have any technical difficulties during the program, Mr. Zev Steen is here to help us out. Thank you very much, Zev. He's our producer, and he'll be able to, if you can chat it, or you can try to get some help like that. So today we're going to go to Virginia with Rabbi Mostovsky. Are you there? Let's see if we can get him in.
Hello.
Oh, hi, how are you? I'm glad you can join us.
Okay. I'm glad to be here.
Terrific. So, you know, when I was speaking to you earlier, yesterday or the day before, you said that the Vada Kashrus, the kosher agency that you're involved with, is called the Vad of Tidewater.
Correct.
And being a New Yorker, I asked you, where is that?
You right? did. You want me to clarify?
You explained it to me. It's in Virginia somewhere.
Is that
an area? Like, does it include a couple of states? What is it exactly?
It's basically, most people know Virginia Beach. Norfolk is right next to Virginia Beach. We're basically in the same area. Tidewater consists of Virginia Beach, Norfolk, where we are, and a few other cities around there. So if you know where Virginia Beach is, that's basically where Norfolk is and where Tidewater is, where Avada Kashrus is located.
Okay, so that's where your kosher agency is. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Rabbi Mostovsky. You've been involved in the kosher world for many years. I know it's more than I've been. I've been about a decade, but I'm pretty sure you've been involved longer than that.
Well, I've been living in Norfolk about 17 years, and I moved down here to be the kosher supervisor for our Avada Kashrus years ago. We had less stuff going on than in Norfolk in kosher, but Baruch Hashem, it's grown over the years. At the same time, I started working with the Star K and some other kosher agencies. National agencies doing supervision for them in the Virginia area or North Carolina or a little above, Virginia, below Virginia, in my general neighborhood. So I've been doing kashrus basically for about 17 years now for, again, our local Avada Kashrus and other kosher agencies across the country.
Okay, so basically, someone's asking here on the chat, do we get to see Rabbi Mostovsky? And The problem is that Rabbi Mostovsky is joining us by cell phone, and I don't know if he can get his picture to us. We haven't been able to work that out yet. But
I'm actually today in Kinston, North Carolina, for the Star K, checking out a plan right now. So
okay,
no way of getting a picture right now.
Right. What I want to do, actually. For those who are joining by the internet, I'm going to try to bring up. You have a website that I saw previously, right? Vad of Tidewater, it's called.
Vadoftidewater.com.
Vad of Tidewater. I'm going to try to see if that can come up on the screen. So you're saying you work for the Star K, as well as your local organization. And so why is that necessary? Why don't you just is there not enough work for you in your local agency? How does that go?
Well, it's a small community. We have limited resources, and we have most of our companies that we supervise are small, small restaurants, just starting out, or very small, or ice cream shops, or we have a few factories that are, again, cookie factories that are small. So no one's really paying a lot of money for our kosher supervision. So, we have limited resources. So to supplement, the Vada Kashas of Tidewater's income, I'm freelancing, I guess, and with some other hashgachas, to make ends meet. But at the same time, I think I'm a good resource because I'm in, down south a little bit. And, between, Virginia and North Carolina, there's a lot of plants and different facilities in the area that are definitely be some of the other national hashgachas, including the Star K, need people to go visit. So, at one hand, it's obviously helping myself. On the same hand, I'm out here, I believe, helping, the kosher agencies as much as possible, having people out in the field.
Right. So that's the point that you're making that I don't think our listeners realize, that the fees and the income from restaurants and caterers, what we call food service, is not enough to run a whole agency. And if you can only rely on that, you're not really going to be able to make ends meet. It's very time-consuming. Takes up a lot of time, and the restaurants are struggling. And it's difficult. It just doesn't bring it in. So you definitely need to support that with other work.
Correct.
Yeah. So you have a good you're working with. I'm looking on your website. I think how many establishments? Here it says here are establishments. How many do you have here? Local, maybe 20. Is that 15?
Oh,
20?
Give
is that right?
Give or take. Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, on your website, I noticed before, when you go to Everything Kosher, you have a link called Everything Kosher with
right.
A beverage list and a cereal list, slurpee list, checking vegetables. I noticed that a lot of those things are taken with permission from the Star K. So it was very...
I try to steal as much as I possibly can with permission. Absolutely. I mean, I find... the Star K webpage is very useful. As I'm trying to have a local Vada Kashrus webpage for people in Norfolk. But we appreciate the help that the Star K gives us with our local Vada and in general. Anytime I call up with any questions for anything, without even hesitation, the Star K is always there to answer the questions. And if they don't know it, they get back to me. And you guys are a very useful resource for everybody in the whole country.
Okay, but they're going to think I paid you to say that, or I told you to say that, Rabbi Mitzvah.
Right, Goldberg did not pay me to say that. That's the truth.
Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about your experiences first in the factories, the plants that you go to. You go almost every day, it seems to me, you're on the road and going to factories and plants. Give us an example of something that came up. You went into a plant. You didn't expect to find what you found. And maybe you can share that with us.
I guess the biggest concern when you go into a plant is I've gone to some plants before in the past where they started making new products, and hopefully you're lucky enough that you go in there and the new products are all kosher. But every once in a while you go into a plant and they either they start a new product that they didn't actually call up the let's say I'm working for the Star K, for instance, and they didn't call up the Star K office and tell them about it. And you walk in there, and you see, either a new line or you see a whole new list of ingredients that are not on your list. And that is probably the most frustrating thing when you're going into a plant, because you try to keep up with the list. I don't know what everyone else does, but when I go to a plant and I find ingredients that are not on my list, let's say the Star K sent me with a list of ingredients that are supposed to be there. So I immediately that day, usually, or the next day, I send my report into the Star K, listing all those ingredients. Hopefully, and usually, most of them are kosher, but they're just not on the list. Either I didn't get an updated list yet, or the plant didn't do the right procedure in sending information in. So sometimes it's really, until you find out everything is okay, it's very nerve-wracking thinking that this plant that you're supervising now, maybe they messed up and they're now having a couple of ingredients in that aren't kosher, which in effect can make everything in the plant non-kosher. So So that is, to me, the biggest, you know, which has happened a few times, but usually it comes out that, you know, they know that they're supposed to have kosher ingredients, and they check, you know, to make sure they're kosher. They just either forgot to call the office, or I didn't get a kosher, you know, so once in a while I would not get a kosher updated list. But, you know, that is the most frustrating and nerve-wracking problem a lot of times. I mean, one other time there was a new plant I actually started going to that, I guess they sent in a list of ingredients to the kosher agency I was going for. And when I got to the plant, literally nothing matched. And I don't know what they were thinking, but, you know, they obviously were, I don't know what they were thinking. So, you know, that was like literally we had to start over from scratch. And it wasn't under supervision yet, so it wasn't a big deal, that plant. But I just walked in there completely confused because I had like 5 ingredients on my list and they had, you know, 30 ingredients, and most of them were not on my list, and some of them weren't even kosher. So, it was, you know, we had to go through everything and clarify it. And that's, you know, that again is the biggest concern going into a factory or a plant that I come across every once in a while.
I think it's correct to say what you did before, just to reiterate that most of the time this information that's not transmitted to the office is a procedural issue. 99% of the time that's what it is. And we need to know that information. We need to pass it along to the supervisor like yourself. But if it doesn't come from time to time, it's usually it's just forgetfulness, and it doesn't cause a kosher problem. But sometimes it does, and that's why we go, and that's why we check. And the example you gave of a company that's first starting out is a great example, because they're not really into it yet. They don't know exactly what we want from them, and that's why we don't. That's why we don't give email certification. You know, you email us what you're making, and we'll email you back the letter. It doesn't work like that. We have to go in, and we use the expression eyeball everything, right, to make sure that it matches, and then we go back from time to time.
And I've also found, I guess, over the years going into plants, that I guess I always assumed, I guess, you know, sometimes the mashgiach going into a plant is out of the loop from between the office and the plant. Sometimes I always assumed that the plant knows that they're supposed to, if they're changing an ingredient, they're supposed to send in a form requesting permission to use this ingredient. And sometimes you learn after speaking to them that they had no idea they were supposed to do that. They thought, you know, since I was coming in, I would check it. And, you know, let's say, again, just using it as an example, but it could be anybody, let the Star K know that they're using this ingredient now. So it's also education sometimes just to make sure everybody knows what everybody is doing and everybody knows what their job is supposed to be in the kosher, keeping the plant kosher. So it's also, you know, a little bit of education when you're going into a plant also for, you know, both the mashgiach, but definitely the plant and, you know, the people running the plant, they also need to know exactly what the procedures are. And, you know,
I had once when I was in San Jose and I was involved with the agency over there, the VOD over there, we supervised a bagel shop. And I remember getting a call on my machine saying that they had wanted to make a fruit platter, but since they couldn't get a hold of me and I to come in to bless the platter, they decided not to do it. So on the one hand, I was pleased that they didn't do something behind my back, so to speak, but on the other hand, if they were still thinking that I was coming in to bless everything, then I didn't educate them very well, because as you know and I know and our listeners know also, kosher has very little to do with blessings and much to do with ingredients and products and process and chemistry and biology and things like that.
Right, absolutely. I mean, that is a line you get, you know, until you really start getting to know people and explain to them what's going on. You know, that's always the line you get, and really, Rabbi, you're coming to bless it. We need you to bless it. And sometimes after you explain things to people, they still don't get it, and they still think you're blessing it. As many times as you explain it to them, they sometimes don't get it. It's actually sometimes funny how many times you have to explain to someone, we're not blessing anything, we're just making sure everything is, you know, the way it's supposed to be. But eventually they get it.
I just want to remind everybody, if you have any questions, we're happy to take questions. If you're by phone listening to us, hit 1-1 on your keypad. Or if you're joining us by web, you can chat with us and ask us whatever you think that we can help you with. Apples to zucchini, we will try to accommodate. Do you remember you went into this particular place, shall remain nameless, Rav Mostovsky? You went there on my behalf, And they had offered to, when I came to have a klezmer band playing for us. Remember that?
I don't remember which plant that was. Give me a hint.
I can't say it on the air. But
okay.
It was one, that's what they thought, you know, a kosher supervisor would appreciate. And I thank
right.
you very much. Again, it leads into the concept of education. And then people change in the factories, right? If you have a quality control manager there 1 week, you know, he moves on, he gets fired. And then there's somebody else there next week, and meanwhile, he has no idea what kosher requires. It's very strict rules. He has to only buy certain ingredients from certain approved sources,
right.
and he has to input that information to the Starkei, whatever agency is certified by, and so on. And he may only be allowed to use certain equipment, and he doesn't. He was never told that. So it's another crucial point that we have to keep up the communication with the factories. Let me ask you something else, sorry, Mr.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was thinking of one plant that I do go to that literally now finally they have one person taking me around every time I come, but it was literally for a few years, almost every time I went, there was a new person in position of quality control, whoever would take me around, and it was literally a nightmare for me because I was literally starting over almost every single time I went to the plant with a new person who basically knew nothing about kosher, and I had to basically educate them all over again each time. So I agree with you. It's sometimes very frustrating, and sometimes you get more organized and more educated, and you have the same people, it makes things go a lot smoother.
Right. Let me ask you, so you're out in a place where there's not a huge Jewish community, a kosher community. What would you say is the difference between being kosher in New York City, in Brooklyn, in Borough Park, if you will, and being in Norfolk, Virginia, what strikes you as different? I mean, better, worse, however it comes out, tell us.
Well, I think living at forget kosher for a second, just living outside of sometimes the bigger Jewish communities, I think sometimes you get a better appreciation of being Jewish sometimes, whereas, you know, you're constantly inviting people over to your house, to small Jewish communities, a lot of people you're trying to mikarev, you're trying to, you know, teach about Judaism. So I think just forget kosher again. I think for my children and my family, I think it's a special thing that my, you know, I remember one time we went, like, you know, my one of my kids asked me who's coming for Shabbos for a meal, and I think that Shabbos for some reason we had nobody coming, and my daughter like turned to me and said, nobody's coming, like in like shock, and it made me feel so good that she was so upset that nobody's coming to our house for a Shabbos meal. So, you know, that's definitely a positive living out of town, so to speak. But it's definitely for kosherists, it sometimes can be challenging. I mean, one of the, you know, not being in the New York, let's say New York or Baltimore, a bigger you know, Jewish community, you're definitely lacking in getting ingredients, certain ingredients or meat. And sometimes when you have caterers, you know, doing a function either in a shul or, and we've had kosher kitchens and hotels in the area in Norfolk, you know, sometimes you have to prepare way in advance, order food way in advance. And as it always happens, something gets messed up, or they get in the meat that has the wrong hashkacha on it, and, you know, I'm not going to let them use it, and what are they going to do? Rabbi, we have nothing else we could use. And, you know, you have to say, I'm sorry, but you know, and usually they end up finding something somewhere, a piece of chicken or a piece of meat, something that they can swap it out that's kosher. But, you know, that is, being out of town, is sometimes is very frustrating. Whereas if you live in New York, you know, you have 100 different stores you can get, you know, if you're in an emergency, you can go get anything from just about anywhere. I mean, just to give an example, this is one of my favorite stories. We used to have a bread bakery. It actually was in Virginia Beach, and they made funky kinds of different breads. It was a nice store. And can you still hear me?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I had my phone clicked. I just wanted to make sure. And they called me up one day. When I went in there one day, they showed me this hot sauce. They said, "Well, we're going to make a hot sauce bread." I don't even know what that tastes like. It doesn't sound very appetizing to me, but that's what they wanted to make. And they had this hot sauce that had a K on it. And I don't know if everyone knows, but K is not necessarily a reliable symbol. You have to check into who gives the K. But you know, most of the time, a lot of the time, K is a problem. K can mean anybody can put it on. So they, you know, I called up this company that made this hot sauce to see if there's some kind of rabbi supervising it. And I got the owner on the phone. It was a small company. And the owner told me, he said, "Well, Rabbi, most of the ingredients in our product are kosher, so we put a K on it." I didn't even know how to respond to the man. I sat down on the phone literally for a second, like quiet, like, and finally I said, you realize how, you know, deceiving that is. That's terrible. People think it's kosher because it has a K, and, you know, all due respect, you cannot say it's kosher, and it's not kosher if not even all your ingredients are kosher. And he said, well, I'm sorry, that's what we're doing, and he hung up the phone.
The thing with the K is that anybody can claim K. It's just a letter in the alphabet. It's not trademarked like the star K or the OK or the OU. It's not a trademark symbol K. You can't trademark a letter.
Right, and that's, you know, living out of town, I guess, again, you know, sometimes it's hard to find, you know, some sources or different things that somebody wants to use, and that's, you know, that's the one this person found that was quote-unquote kosher, which ended up not being kosher. So, you know, that's one example. I would tell you another example is being out of town.
I just want to interrupt for a second. We do have a question, and since we invite the questions, I want to take that. So hold that thought a second. The question is,
sure.
By chat, the question he's asking is, when do you require a mashgiach tamidi? A mashgiach tamidi is a supervisor who's there on a constant basis, not just going in and out from time to time, but he's there every second that the production is happening. So when do we require a mashgiach tamidi? So I'll answer that, and then you a chance, Mostovsky. Well, basically, it depends on what's being produced. I mean, that's the bottom line. If we're making canned corn and you know, we're not going to be there all the time unless the plant is also making at the same time other items like meat or something which would be not compatible with the kosher requirements. But if the plant is making the same item constantly and it's an all kosher plant, then we don't require a supervision there constantly. If the plant is making something that requires a more serious supervision like meat or fish, or if they have dual lines where they're making kosher and non-kosher at the same time, that might require a mashgiach to meet a constant supervision, or if they need kosherization, then it might require that. What do you say, Mostovsky? How would you...
Well, I agree with you 100%. That's actually where I was going next with what I was telling you. You know, I'm not going to see a difference, but, you know, one of the challenges of living out of town or in a small community is, just an example is we have a bagel shop here in Norfolk. That they have non-kosher in the bagel shop also, but the bagels are a whole separate operation that they make, and we only supervise the uncut bagels. Now, in Baltimore or in New York, I'm pretty sure that nobody would give a supervision on a facility like that. But in Norfolk, this is the only way we can get bagels that are kosher, and that's, sometimes, I'm not going to say you have to settle, but obviously we have to be very careful making sure nothing is intermingling and everything is done the way we want to. And it's definitely not in the perfect situation, but, you know, sometimes when you're out of town, you have to, I don't even want to say bend the rules, because we're not bending the rules, but we have to, you know, sometimes make, you know, exceptions so we can have something to eat. Because, you know, we want, you know, the options are people are going to have kosher bagels, or they're going to go not get kosher bagels, they get non-kosher bagels. So sometimes we make those exceptions. And I can tell you that, you know, one of the things we did in the past when I first came to Norfolk is when we had really less people in town, was we had, you know, a restaurant that we had, a Yotza V'Nichnas. You know, I would go in and out every day. It wasn't even a, you know, we didn't have a rabbi there all the time. We didn't have a mashgiach there all the time. You know, now we've, you know, in recent years, you know, the community grew a little bit and we have more people in town. So, you know, we have a restaurant now that we have a mashgiach, tamidi, and you know, we as much as possible, we try to up the ante, if you want. Make the standards as high as possible as much as you can. But, you know,
would you say that somebody, it's fair to say that somebody who's used to, let's say, the New York standard, when they're going out of town, they should be in touch with the agency out of town or, in, you know, in the small communities to
absolutely
find out what the standards
are? I get calls all the time. I just got a call from somebody from yesterday calling about, you know, one of our restaurants to make sure it turned out. Absolutely. I mean, you should go anywhere, not just Virginia, obviously, but anywhere you're going, you want to make sure. And sometimes you go to you go to Florida, you go to Baltimore, and sometimes there's more than one hashkacha. You don't know, you know, sometimes some of them might be good, some of them might be bad. So it's always good to call and find out what hashkacha they have and check what they have. And, you know, meanwhile, once in a while, I go down to Florida just to get away for a few days. There's so many restaurants in Florida. you never know which ones are, you know, I mean, some of the Ashkafas obviously you know, but some of them you never heard of, or some of them are ones you're not sure if they're really good for restaurants. And, you know, I always call. If I don't call, you know, the Starcade to ask about it, or I call someone in Florida, you know, and I'm in the business. But nevertheless, you always want to, you always got to make sure that wherever you're going, that it's a, you know, you make sure where you're going is a proper, you know, a proper Hashkacha on the restaurant.
I want to tell you, Rabbi Stavsky, that Rabbi Rosen came in to talk with us for a couple of minutes.
Shalom, how are you?
Baruch Hashem, how are you doing, Rabbi Rosen?
And Rabbi Rosen is an expert in many areas, liquor and turkey. You just came back. You turkey plants, right? Not turkey as in bok, 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 but turkey as in the country, right?
We just came back.
We just came back from Turkey. What were you doing in Turkey, Rabbi Rosen?
We actually did a very interesting project. That this is the third year of giving a kosher seminar to companies in Turkey. We did this, it originated from the Izmir Exporters Union, and we had a very fine turnout. I, along with Rabbi David Stein, our field representative in Turkey, gave a comprehensive seminar explaining the kosher rules, explaining how kosher certification can improve their business, and how we actually in detail go about giving certification to plants, in this case the Turkish plants.
So Rabbi Mostavsky, you want to take a trip out there?
Yeah, I've been asking Rabbi Rosen to take me out to some of these, you know, North Carolina is a nice place, but I wouldn't mind going to Turkey once in a while.
So you'd like to get out, get and see the world.
Yeah, so, North Carolina is not so bad.
Once you see the world, you realize it's not as you know, as glamorous as it may be. As you know, the days on the road are very difficult, and it's tough. You have to you're mostly catching flights from place to place. And to people not in the kosher world, it sounds very exciting. And in a sense, it is. It's very interesting. You learn a lot, but it also can be grueling. But So did any plants sign on there in
we've
Turkey?
Definitely had a good interest. We went through also during the week that we were there. We visited Starcade companies, the various companies and the different types of products that we make in Turkey range from obviously Turkish apricots is an obvious Turkish product. We make olives and produce olives and olive oil. Then there's also, interestingly enough, it's one of the big centers for sun-dried tomatoes. One company that we had actually had was started by a professor who was a world expert in tomato growing. His student is now undertaken the task, and we visited a number of those companies. Also, they have the various types of Greek, Turkish peppers and jardinera and all the vegetables that are indigenous to that country. Of course, you need to have vinegar to make those types of salads. So we have a vinegar company, more than one. And
I want to let Rabbi Mostavsky go because I know he's on a tight schedule. Thank you very much for joining us. It was very enlightening.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Shalom.
We'll talk to you next time.
You will. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Just for station identification, this is Starcade's monthly teleconference with web access as well. And we're here in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. Now joining me is Rabbi Tzvi Rosen.
Hello.
Tzvi and Tzvi. And this teleconference is actually recorded. If you want to get the recording or you want to share it with somebody else, you can go to Kosher Classes. That's kosher, then classes.org, and click on podcast, and you can access this and all the other classes that we've had. And if you have any questions, you are more than welcome to ask it via your telephone. Hit 1-1 on your keypad, or you can chat it to us. We enjoy the questions. They add life to our program. We appreciate that. And somebody is giving plus signs. Then what does that mean in computer language? Okay, I'm not sure. I think he means he likes it, I hope. Okay, so let me ask you, Avi Rosen. In Turkey, the Turkish plants, they want kosher because they want to export to Israel? Or they want to export to
Israel and the United States and Europe?
Okay.
Actually, we also have some that export to Australia, and Australia is very happy to have kosher products. And
what about the security there? I mean, sometimes you hear that there's warnings about traveling to Turkey. The Israeli government issues something. You know, they don't always get along so well.
Rabbi Goldberg, let me tell
you. Did you wear your yarmulke and your tzitzis out there? Or your baseball cap?
100. The way you see me now is the way I went in Turkey.
Is that the way? No problem.
No problem.
Okay.
But we're fortunate enough to have someone who actually picks us up. We have a very delightful young man who is our driver and goes to the plants with us. He definitely has added to the efficiency of the trip.
Well, he's a Turkish.
We know him from our dealings in the food trade, and he's been kind enough to offer us his services. Judging from the flight that I took for Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael on Thursday night, that there was not a seat available from a Turkish airline flight to Tel Aviv. It did
all
not
full
exist,
of Israelis?
All full of Israelis,
oh.
and the flight back.
So how do they treat you? You know, when you go into a factory, you get different reactions from the people there, the owners. And even in America, it depends where you are. Some, you know, very respectful, and some not so. In Turkey, they treat you like they would the iman, or they treat you like
very
like
much
they
so.
Treat you with respect.
A tremendous amount of respect.
That's very important for the kosher aspect of it too. That they should understand that it's important. It's not just, you know, business deal. It's an important thing that they're doing.
One of the very interesting aspects of going to doing inspections in Turkey is that you first have to go ahead and sit with the particular either plant manager or owner or the officials that are doing the audit, as they say, the audit with us, and you have to sit down, have something to drink,
schmooze,
and talk and schmooze.
A lot of Coke Zero.
And then
you get down to business.
And get down to business.
Well, that's how they do it in the Middle East.
That's it. I mean, you have to watch. I had them offer me a carpet when I had to daven mincha.
They offered you a carpet. Okay. So is there anything that you have to be more careful of in Turkey than in the United States when you're looking at the fact? Anything that, like, it tends to be more of an issue?
No, I think they really understand that it's the same issues that we have in it. Each particular company has their own. We have the same bishulakum issues of cooking or with cooking rice for the stuffed vine leaves. The same vinegar issues that we would have in any company here that we're not allowed to use wine vinegar, the various components and flavors that would have to come with good kosher certification. But it's interesting that from the times that we began in Turkey to now, there are many plants in Turkey. They're very well aware of the need for kosher certification. There are many plants that have kosher certification. And there is a brisk business in there, and they know that if they wanted to come to the United States and to exhibit in the fancy food show, if they don't have the sheepskin, they're not going to be able to go. They know it's necessary for their business,
right.
And we try to be, to help them to achieve their goals.
Okay. Well, Rabbi Rosen, if there aren't any other questions, we're going to, close it out here for today. I did get some of these questions recently. Maybe we could discuss these. Nothing to do with Turkey, but does every food require kosher certification? The writer wants to know.
The answer is no.
No. Right. And I think people listening, our regular listeners, would know the answer is no, because it depends on how complicated the item is.
Now, there's also one thing that Rabbi Heideman has always pointed out in terms of a difference between not requiring a certification and something which is certified. And as far as something which is certified, some people will only take something which is certified because they feel that they will not be comfortable without having a set of eyes that are looking on the particular product, even water, for
right.
that matter.
Okay. And, I mean bottled water.
Bottled
water. Right. Well, let's take like an example like orange juice, which in some instances we don't require to have any certification. But if you do get a certification, you are getting something for your money, and that the agency is there in the plant, and they're making sure that there's nothing, there's no grape juice or no issues that arise with that orange juice, and so it is. I would say it's worthwhile, you know.
For sure. I mean, we know from one of our companies that that when they pasteurize orange juice in a dairy, as opposed to having it in a juice company, that the dairy can often pasteurize milk on the same lines.
Right, so you have to be careful with that. We do have a question here. Can you discuss the combination of organic supervision and kosher supervision? So I think what she's talking about, we saw on our site that we have a new program with QAI,
that is
which
correct.
Is Quality Assurance
International,
which is the largest organic certifying agency. Is that right?
Correct.
In the United States?
That was actually one of the intriguing parts of the seminar, talking about how there is an overlap
right.
between both kosher
right.
certification
right.
and auditing.
The processes are pretty much the same.
You're
looking at the ingredients, looking at the sources of those ingredients, you're looking at the equipment, what else is made on the
equipment. I think it's interesting, though, as I've spoken to, because we have on staff a number of our supervisors who are certified organic supervisors as well, that they actually have a very comprehensive audit, and the audit is more paper oriented. We basically have both a paper orientation in terms of the ingredients and having to have a file of what the kosher ingredients are, but we are also very much an on-site type of an
right. So we have people who have been trained by the organic organization, and they go into the factory, and they can do a kosher inspection and an organic inspection at the same time, and they are acting on behalf of this QAI,
correct.
And they can issue, well, they can't issue, but they send a report to QAI, and QAI issues an organic certification. And that is, in a nutshell, about organic certification. Okay, we have another question, is that wouldn't commercial orange juice, because I brought up a can of worms, commercial orange juice, wouldn't it require certification today, as the same line might be used for grape juice or clam juice? And the answer is that what we said before, I think, that yes, it's better to get it with a certification, but even if you get it without, the grape juice issues are minimal.
There are, and different organizations handle that problem, which is very differently too. And
right.
sometimes you could even ask that particular organization whether or not they do kosher between the grape juice productions and the regular oranges production. That's been in the Star K, one of the
right. If we give a certification to the oranges, I mean, and the grape juice on that line, it means we would be kosherizing the line in between. But even if it were kosherized, it would still be kosher, the orange juice, because of nullification and so on. So therefore, we do allow consumers to use grape juice, not grape juice without certification, but orange juice without certification. Grape juice without certification is, by definition, non-kosher.
Correct.
Grape juice definitely needs to be certified in order to be kosher. All right, so I want to thank you, Rabbi Rosen, for coming for a few minutes to join
pleasure.
Us.
As always, Rabbi Goldberg, you do a great job.
We thank you. We look forward to having you again. And thank you, listeners, for joining us. Our program is, again, every Wednesday, the last Wednesday of each month, at the same numbers and the same web addresses. Please pass it along to your friends and let them know. You're welcome to ask us questions either today through this conference or through our phone number, 410-484-4110, 410-484-4110, or you can email us at star-k@star-k.org, or go to our website, and you'll find all the links over there. And we look forward to you joining us next month. Have a great day. One more thing. If you would be so kind, you can fill out a feedback so we can know how we do. You can grade us. If you go to if you're joining us by Dimdim, go to the tools icon on the top right of your screen, and you click there, and you'll see it has feedback. And if you fill that out, it will come email to us, and we will be able to even do a better job next time, Rabbi Rosen.
Right.
If that's even possible, I don't know.
Rabbi Goldberg is always onwards and upwards.
Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye.